I'm Scott Walterman. Russian forces are still scrambling to respond to a surprise Ukrainian attack after almost a week of fierce fighting. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamas reports that Russian President Vladimir Putin insists Moscow's army will prevail.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin has said that Ukraine's incursion into Kursk in Russia is an attempt to stop Moscow's eastern offensive. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that the Ukrainian attack on Kursk is also a tactic to gain leverage in future peace talks. Russian forces are still scrambling to respond to the surprise Ukrainian attack, but Putin insisted that Moscow's army will prevail. More than 100,000 civilians have been forced to flee as almost a week of fierce fighting continues. Putin has remained defiant and has said the Russian military is driving on with its eastern Ukraine offensive regardless. I'm Karen Chamas.
A fire broke out Sunday at a cooling tower at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine, which is under the control of Russian forces. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russian troops of having started the fire. The Russians say it's from Ukrainian shelling. International security expert at Chatham House, Marion Messmer.
I am from South Africa, and I can say you'd think it would be hotter in Africa, but the power heat is far worse than it is in Africa.
Europe is dealing with a massive heat wave. That was a tourist in Paris where the temperature soared to 40 degrees Celsius. The heat not helping firefighters in Greece, where more than 670 of them are battling a fierce wildfire about 35 kilometers north of Athens. The wildfire, fueled by gale force winds, spread to the edge of the Greek capital. This is VOA News. Hong Kong's top court on Monday unanimously dismissed the bid to overturn the convictions of media tycoon Jimmy Lai and six other pro-democracy campaigners for unauthorized assembly in 2019. Reuters correspondent Leila Sharakashini has details.
76-year-old Lai, the founder of the pro-democracy newspaper Apple Daily and others, including Martin Lee, had been found guilty of organizing and participating in an unauthorized assembly in August 2019 during months-long pro-democracy protests in the China-ruled city. A lower court had overturned their conviction for organizing the unauthorized assembly, but their conviction for taking part in an unauthorized procession was upheld. The appeal focused on whether the conviction was proportionate to fundamental human rights protections.
Hong Kong's top court on Monday unanimously dismissed the bid to overturn convictions of media tycoon Jimmy Lai. Pakistan's military said on Monday it had arrested the former chief of the top spy agency, Lieutenant General Faz Hamid, and initiated court-martial proceedings against him. The arrest was ordered by the Supreme Court in connection with a land development case and multiple violations of the Pakistan Army Act after his retirement. Aviation staff at Kenya's main international airport say they'll go on strike next week over a contested investment proposal from an Indian conglomerate. About 10,000 members of the Kenya Aviation Workers Union say they'll walk out August 19th, according to the union. The dispute centers on plans by the Kenyan government to enter into an investment agreement with a group from India to expand and modernize the international airport. The Paris Olympics are over, capped off with a dazzling closing ceremony. Here's Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamas in Paris.
Paris has closed out 2.5 extraordinary weeks of Olympic sports and emotion with a star-studded show in France's National Stadium. Fireworks erupted into the night sky as Paris capped off the closing ceremony, which many spectators described as unforgettable. Florida tourist Teresa Miller told the AP,
"It was so well put together, and it encompassed the spirit of the Games."
The French capital has handed over hosting duties for the Summer Games to the next city in line, Los Angeles, in 2028. Hollywood star Tom Cruise descended from the top of the stadium to the Mission Impossible theme song before taking the Olympic flag from star gymnast Simone Biles, putting it on the back of a motorcycle and roaring out of the stadium. Los Angeles is looking to prove that topping Paris isn't Mission Impossible. I'm Karen Chalas.
This is It's Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So I think you can really see how concerned the Samia Suluhu government is about this being a broader youth movement, because once it spreads and once the youth come out to vote, it'll be very difficult for the Chama Cha Mapinduzi to continue to hold on to power.
That's David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, on the youth movement in Tanzania mobilizing. Details coming up. Also, we look at the Paris Olympics, which concluded yesterday, and some 12 million people have been forced to flee their homes in Sudan. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Start with our top story. Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema, is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of its leaders and young supporters. It comes after the party accused police of arresting Chadema's former presidential candidate, Tundu Lissu, party chairman Freeman Mbowe, John Mianka, and secretary general, and more than 400 youth members over the weekend. Lissu and other party leaders had planned to address a conference today to mark International Youth Day. For more reaction to the arrests, VOA's Peter Cloti reached John Merama, Chadema's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs.
Up to this moment, police have arrested 443 people from different parts of the country. Most of them were the youths who were on their way to go to the Youth International Day celebrations in Mbeya. And yesterday evening, the police arrested our former presidential candidate and the PAT vice chairman, Tundu Lissu. Our secretary general, John Mnyika, was also arrested by the police. And up to this moment, we don't know where are they, because the police, they are not saying about them. We've sent our lawyers in Mbeya. They've been in several different police stations, but the police, they are denying that they are not in their custody. So we don't know where are they.
But is it true that police officers arrested them?
It is true. They were arrested by the police under the supervision of the regional police commander of Mbeya region, with the regional crime officer of the region, because they were arrested inside our office.
But if the police are denying that they arrested them, then things don't add up.
And that's why we are calling them to release them or brought them to the court of law if, anyway, they did anything wrong. This morning, because of that situation, the chairman of the party, Honorable Freeman Mbowe, decided to take a flight to Mbeya so that he can go and talk to the police and ask them to show him where are they. And specifically, Honorable Tundu Lissu, because Tundu Lissu is always in medication. His assistants, yesterday, they are saying that he didn't get his medication. And when Mr. Mbowe reached Mbeya Songwe Airport, the police also arrested him inside the VIP lounge at the airport in Mbeya. So as we speak now, also the chairman of the Mbowe is under the custody of police.
But John Rema, the police are saying that the youth day that you said is being organized by the party to celebrate the International Youth Day is just a pretext for your party to cause confusion, to misinform the Tanzanian youth, to cause problems in the country.
That is their narrative, and it is not true at all, because how can we organize such a thing within the institution? Last year, we did organize the same, and they did celebrate in Mwanza region. The previous year, we did the same. The ruling party, they are now showing their true colors. They are coming out to try to bring us back to the times of Magufuli, when the police were arresting our leaders everywhere in the country. This is what we are seeing right now.
Does that mean that because of the arrest, your celebrations and plans for the celebration will not proceed as planned?
Up to this moment, I don't think it can proceed, because the police, they didn't even arrest only the leaders of the youth and the people. They even confiscated our equipment, stage, Even the tents were confiscated by the police yesterday. So at the grounds where we planned to organize such a big rally, huge rally, it is under the control of police as we speak, and they are not allowing anybody to get across it. So we don't think we can proceed with it because it has been disrupted to that level.
That was John Marama, Chadema's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs, speaking with VOA's Peter Clotie. The police say they had banned the youth rally because they were concerned it would be used to stir up violence. The roundup continues as police arrested Freeman Mbowe, senior leader of Chadema, Tanzania's main opposition party, and the leader of its youth wing, John Mpabalu. The arrests, according to David Monda, political science professor at City University of New York, are part of President Samia Suluhu Hassan's efforts to consolidate power. He tells me leaders in Tanzania are worried because they think the youth in Tanzania may be getting inspiration from the recent Generation Z protests in Kenya. Those protests led Kenyan President William Ruto to withdraw unpopular legislation that would have raised taxes.
It really shows how insecure the Chama cha Mapinduzi, that's the ruling party, is in Tanzania about, one, the opposition being able to sell its program to the public, because CCM, the ruling party, has dominated the politics for so many years. But I think that the bigger problem is the concern that the youth protests that we had in neighboring Kenya, which spread to Uganda, we saw it even in Nigeria, are now coming to Tanzania. I think the ruling party is very concerned about that, and they are really trying to restrict it, because we shouldn't forget that later this year we'll have local elections in Tanzania, followed by general elections in 2025. So Samia Suluhu is really trying to consolidate power, and by harassing the opposition, I think this is one way of restricting their ability to challenge her rule and the power of the CCM.
But Professor, like you just mentioned, Samia Sulu taking the helm on March 2021 after Magufuli's sudden death, she had moved away from her predecessor's repressive policies and embarked on political reforms, including relaxing some restrictions on the media and the opposition. But it seems now that whatever she's doing is very similar to the mass opposition arrests we saw when Magufuli was president.
You know, to be honest, when she began, President Samia Suluhu promised to be a reformer, to move away from the autocratic and authoritarian behavior of John Magufuli. So she legalized opposition rallies in 2023, which had been banned in 2016 by Magufuli. But I think it's important, even as as she was touted as a reformer when she first came into office, a lot of her reforms have been very cosmetic. And she's really fundamentally continued with the repression of the Magufuli era. We should remember that a lot of opposition politicians were forced into exile during her term. And even Tindi Lissu was almost killed in an assassination attempt, which has never been investigated, and nobody has been brought to book, although there are a lot of suspicions that the ruling party was behind it.
And going back to what you just said about Kenya, because Kenya's demonstrations were actually led by this Generation Z, the youth wing in Tanzania also has said about 10,000 youngsters were expected to meet in Mbeya to mark International Youth Day today under the slogan, "Take Charge of Your Future." Are you saying the inspiration came from whatever happened in Kenya?
Very much so. Regionally, I think Kenya is seen as a leader in terms of expanding democratic space and as a model for the region. So I think Tanzanian youth are really picking a leaf from the Gen Z in Kenya. And I think the challenge for CCM here, what they are afraid of is the majority of the electorate are these young people. More than half of the population is composed of youth below 25 years old. So what the ruling elites know is that if the youth are able to mobilize around the opposition and around broader questions of expanded political space, broader questions of free and fair elections, aside from manipulation of the Electoral Commission by the ruling party, around questions of corruption and around questions of other political parties being able to also sell their ideology to Tanzanians. I think that the ruling government of Samia Suluhu is terrified about that. And this is why you see those 10,000 youth, they were rounded up by the police, roughed up and sent back to their locations under armed escort. So I think you can really see how concerned the Samia Suluhu government is about this being a broader youth movement, because once it spreads and once the youth come out to vote, it will be very difficult for the Chama cha Mapinduzi to continue to hold on to power.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke to me from New York. Sudan has had the world's worst displacement crisis for several months, and it is not getting any better. Some 12 million people have been forced to flee their homes, and more than 2 million have crossed borders, mostly to neighboring countries. Jason Avens, Medical Teams International Country Director for Uganda, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that his group has seen tens of thousands of Sudanese refugees cross into Uganda this year after traveling through neighboring South Sudan to get there.
About 50,000 have come since last year, about 35,000 this year, and most have come overland through South Sudan. And it's interesting, these Sudanese refugees tend to be urban in nature, and so they've decided not to stop in South Sudan. And admittedly, South Sudan does host a large group of Sudanese refugees, I think about 500,000. But Uganda has really progressive refugee policies that would allow refugees to be able to work, to access the education system. And so many refugees continue through South Sudan and into Uganda. So
you think it's like more economic base that they pass through South Sudan and keep on going?
I think it's a mixture of factors, to be honest with you. I think that definitely it's going to have more opportunities in Uganda, and it's going to be kinder, much harder to get to. And so it's an effort to come all the way through South Sudan, which is a big country with poor infrastructure. But obviously the opportunities here when they come are potentially more.
When the refugees arrive in Uganda from their trip, however many days it takes them, what kind of condition are these refugees in?
Yeah, it's interesting. We meet about 90% of the refugees come overland, and we meet them at the border. Most of them come through a border point in northern Uganda called Elegu. There's a small team that meet them. Medical Teams International, our role is to provide health screening. And what we found is often it's been a hard journey. And so many of them have picked up ailments on the way. We had cholera earlier in the year brought about. And it was interesting. Our team in Sudan had been running a program and had been encountering a lot of cholera. And so they were already warning us that it may turn up, and it did. And a number of other things, measles, meningitis, I think, was another one that came. So we screen. We try and address those issues, and then
do you automatically screen for those things even if they don't show symptoms?
Yes, we do. Yeah, no, we do, and it's a part of, you know, obviously keeping the population of Uganda also safe. We also work on the border with Congo and of DRC, and we have similar issues having to manage disease outbreaks coming from those pretty pretty challenging environments in South Sudan and in DRC. So, you know, we have to deal with quite a few outbreaks that come that way. So the refugees have gathered at the border, and every day a transport runs for about an hour. It's about an hour's journey to the reception center where the refugees would be processed and screened at a deeper level. Dealing with issues also such as malnutrition, which on a long journey may have set in, and the nutritional intake of the refugees in transit might not have been very good. So then once they're processed and after a short time, it's supposed to be a few days, but normally it's a couple of weeks, the refugees are sent to a longer-term settlement.
That is Jason Evans, Medical Teams International Country Director for Uganda. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Will the youth vote send Kamala Harris or Donald Trump to the White House? Organizers on both sides have been seen as well voter enthusiasm and support, particularly among young voters. But the younger demographic has had a historically low turnout at the polls. VOA's Tina Tran explores whether that could change come November.
A growing share of U.S. voters are young people who could play a pivotal role in the general election this November, perhaps even helping to elect the first woman president in U.S. history. That is, if they turn out to vote. Rudy Garrett is vice president of capacity building at the Alliance for Youth Action, a national network of organizations promoting youth civic engagement.
The reasons why young people are a little bit more dubious about showing up this election cycle is directly tied to their frustration with how our current government is working. Young people are experiencing a lot of frustration because they're not seeing change happen at the speed in which they would like to see it happen in their communities.
But since Vice President Kamala Harris became the Democratic presidential nominee, there's been a notable shift in terms of excitement. Nika Hammad is Deputy Executive Director at Priorities USA, a Democratic political action committee.
The numbers with young voters in particular were great. On enthusiasm especially, we saw a 5 percentage point increase in young voters' intent to vote basically overnight.
19-year-old Celeste Galvez is one of those who's feeling energized by the change.
I was like not really planning on even voting in the first place, but now that he's dropped out and Kamala's running, I'm more like excited for like stepping into like a new world where like we can have a woman as a president. Like I'm actually excited about politics now.
The excitement has translated to a spike in new voter registrations. Vote.org reported over 100,000 people registering to vote in the 7 days after Joe Biden announced he was stepping down, with voters ages 18 to 34 making up nearly 85% of those new registrations. But the presidential race remains close, and there are equal numbers of young voters, particularly young men, who favor former President Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee. Again, Ahmed.
A lot of them don't find that the U.S. economy as a whole works for them. So when Democrats talk about, you know, record job growth, huge number of jobs that President Biden has created, they don't see themselves in that framework.
26-year-old Frankie Russell is one of them.
The way to get my age is that you got to talk to my age group. You can't be running the same low taxes, the claim of like, we just lower taxes, guns and faith. I'm like, well, that's not enough. We need other stuff. You know, we need American first policy in general. You know, no new wars. No sending our money overseas, but keeping it at home.
Here's Garrett again.
Frustration does not equal apathy. Young people actually understand what's happening in politics. They care about what's going on. They're just not seeing the change that they want to see be actuated through engaging in the electoral process. But I think that the switch up that has happened over the last couple of weeks has definitely created a new trajectory.
Whether that trajectory will extend to the ballot box remains to be seen, but it's clear that young voters should not be discounted come November. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Now for our Olympic roundup, we have VOA sports analyst and host of our Olympic podcast, Chasing Gold, Mokbil Yabaro, in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So finally, the Paris Olympics wrapped up yesterday. How many African countries medaled this year?
Yeah, Hayes. So 12 countries from Africa have medaled, Kenya being at the top of that list. So Kenya, South Africa, Ethiopia, Algeria, Egypt, Tunisia, Botswana, Uganda, Morocco, Cote d'Ivoire, Cabo Verde, and Zambia. Kenya is leading with all medals at 11, 4 golds, 2 silvers, and 5 bronze.
There are also some really interesting storylines this year. Can you share a few of those?
Absolutely. So if we're just talking about some of the quick storylines that we see, I would say that one of the main storylines that I really liked was Algeria. So we have Kalia Nemour, who is a French-Algerian gymnast. She originally was supposed to be competing for France, but due to some issues with the French Federation and her getting injured and them not wanting her to, participate in the on their team, she ends up switching because she's a dual citizen of both France and Algeria. She competes for France and ends up winning gold in the women's uneven bars.
Gold?
Gold. Not silver, not bronze, but gold.
Big blunder.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And another one also, we have Iman Khalif. We also spoke about her in the past. She is the boxer, the Algerian boxer, that had a lot of controversy surrounding whether or not she was a woman or all these question marks. The Olympic Committee came out and said, absolutely, she has been competing as a woman for years. She is actually a biological woman, and she ended up winning gold for Algeria as well in the 66-kilogram weight.
So, Mokbil, if you had to choose the African face of athletics, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a tough one, Yeheyes. I would say that I would have to definitely put Letsela Teboho from Botswana kind of like at the top of that list. The young man is 21 years old. He won gold in the 200 meters, and he defeated Noah Lyles and stopping the U.S.'s Noah Lyles from doubling, which a lot of people expected him to win. So he wins that race. And then he also competes in the 4x400 relay and wins silver and almost catches up to the U.S. team and basically runs the fastest speed at that 400-meter race at, I believe, 42.9 seconds, showcasing that he can also run at that speed. Just to put this into perspective, Yehez, he ran the 100 meters. I believe he placed sixth place in that, and we saw how close from number one to number eight was. So it wasn't like
fraction.
It wasn't like sixth place was way behind. You know, it could have been anybody's race. He ran the 100 meters, ran the 200 meters, and also the relay 400 meters. We have not seen an athlete run in three different discipline sprints like that for a really long time. I also wanted to highlight the Ethiopian Dutch runner Sifan Hassan. She was running for the Netherlands. I believe she has won three different types of medals this year. She won the marathon, the women's marathon. She won gold. Then she also won bronze in two other competitions, the 5,000 meters and the 10,000 meters. So that's another person who we have not seen something of that level where, you know, a marathon runner is running for hours. 2 hours and 22 minutes, she just made a new Olympic record. And then from that distance to also being able to run in the 5,000 and the 10,000.
Endurance.
Endurance, and then a lot shorter is very different. So we will be seeing her for years to come. Tamrat Tolai also won for Ethiopia, was a replacement for Lema, right? Was a replacement and then wins the whole thing.
By a world record. What?
Amazing stories.
Yes, yes.
Beautiful. What an amazing Olympics.
And Mokbil Yabaro, analyst, host of our Olympic podcast, Chasing Gold, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Yehiye Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.